Okay, so let's get started. So before we do, the audio portion is starting, so hopefully you can hear me. If you can't, you can also join, excuse me, by computer speaker or by telephone. So if you can't hear me, hopefully you're reading this and able to join us here shortly. Okay, so first, thank you for joining this Fulbright webinar this afternoon. We offer an ongoing series of webinars throughout the competition cycle on a variety of topics. Naturally, as this one is approaching the deadline, it's one of our last webinars for this application cycle. And today we'll be focusing on how to complete the application for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. My name is Catherine Matto. I work on the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program as the application and selection lead. And today is Wednesday, September 9th, for whoever needs that reminder of what day it is. For this webinar, I'll be sharing the essentials of applying to the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program before spending some quality time in the application. I'll be focusing on the nuts and bolts of the application system rather than helping you to select an award and prepare your application materials. I'll also provide a summary of the review and selection process. So just to be clear, we're talking about the U.S. Scholar Program, meaning the opportunities for U.S. citizens applying to go abroad. I hope to answer many of your questions in the course of the webinar. I am joined by one of my colleagues who will be trying to keep up with some of your questions on the questions module as well. But we know that there's a lot of interest and a lot of participants today, so we appreciate your patience. We'll also try to save some time at the end for any questions and answers. So you can use that module to ask questions ahead of time during the course of the webinar, and we'll try to get through them. While I can talk fast, I may run out of time at the end, so you can also email us, and I have our email address up here if we weren't able to get to your question. And finally, this webinar is being recorded, and we'll post the presentation with active hyperlinks as well as the recording on our website for your reference in the coming days. The webinar just like this that was held a couple of weeks ago is on our website as well. So same content, same application, so you can access either of those if you think you might have missed something or if you just need a really great way to put yourself to sleep at night. Okay, so the Fulbright Program, as you know, the Fulbright Program is the U.S. government's flagship academic exchange program. It's been administered for more than 60 years by the Council for International Exchange of Scholars at the Institute of International Education. And we work on behalf of the U.S. Department of State Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. We work in concert with our U.S. embassies and Fulbright commissions abroad on program administration. Now, the Scholar Program is comprised of several kinds of opportunities, including those for teaching, research, and professional projects. In terms of eligibility for all of our U.S. Scholar Programs, U.S. citizenship is the absolute requirement. In terms of degrees and experience, this generally varies by award, so we encourage you to review the eligibility tab on our application on the U.S. Scholar website, as well as for the specific award that you are looking to apply to. Okay, so we have a lot of webinars that we've held over the past months that delve further into selecting an award, so I'm going to move quickly through this so we can spend some more time in the application. But ultimately, the process looks something like this. You, the applicant, have an idea or a few ideas for a project and then decide on the location. Or you may have a location in mind and you design the project around it. So regardless, you are looking at the catalog of awards to see what awards are offered that might be a good fit for you and your project. And each country that offers awards are listed in this catalog. And each award contains important information describing the qualifications necessary, the parameters of the grant, and other pertinent details. All awards have four parts: the award details, award requirements, award benefits, and a country or area overview. It's important to read all of these. I want to highlight especially the award details in the award requirements page, or sections of the award. You'll find that awards can vary widely even within the same country, so you want to read those carefully. You'll want to consider your background and expertise and the project that you've conceived to help identify the award that fits best, or at this point in the process to make sure that it's the right one. You'll find contact information in the awards, and we're happy to help you answer any questions that you may have. So you've chosen an award, and you've refined your project, and you're ready to submit that application. So In a moment, I'll walk you through the application, and then I'll briefly review what happens after you submit your application, the review and selection process. So, the application components. Ultimately, you'll prepare an application package that clearly describes your proposed project and that demonstrates your preparation and your background and your experience. On our website, we have a lot more guidance on these components and what the supporting documents should contain. What I can do in walking you through the application is show you how to upload them. So let's proceed to the application. What I'm going to do is I'll navigate to it from the catalog so you can see how to get there. So let's see. We'll go to our U.S. Scholar Program page. Hopefully that is big enough. We'll have the awards catalog here on our website, and you'll be able to go to a particular country. So maybe you want to go to Azerbaijan, and you'll pick that award, and then you'll open it, and you'll see, okay, so the grant activity is open to teaching research combined, or professional project and teaching. So this particular award doesn't offer only research, but there are plenty of other awards that do, don't worry. It does specify 4 months for one semester or 9 months for an academic year grant. It has the grant date spelled out, and it also has the locations that they suggest here. The award is open to flex, so that is described further here, and it also is open to all disciplines. So if I wanted to apply for that award, I could click on Begin Application Process, and that will take me to the Fulbright Scholar Program webpage, where you can click on Application. Now, I already have an application started. In fact, I worked on an application last year. So I'm going to log in to that application. Spelling counts in this case. Let's see if I've got I got my password right. Okay, super. So you can see in this case I had worked on an application last year, and you can see that here. To start a new application, you start a new application here. Now, if you didn't submit or start an application last year, this isn't going to show up. So you'll just click on Start New Application. I'll go ahead and create. I'll go ahead and click Open Application, and I'll make this a little bit bigger for you all so you can see it. So on this welcome page, you'll see instructions, you'll see deadlines, you'll see links to instructions. So these links here go to PDFs with the written out instructions for the application. So if you have any questions, this can be a handy resource. Okay, so next up, we can go to the data privacy page. That's our next page in the application. And this page lets you know that we do take your privacy very seriously. And if you click yes, then you can continue. If you click no, then it will not allow you to continue your application. In this case, I'm going to click yes. A couple tips before we get further into the application. Some people will ask, what browser should I use? I'm using Internet Explorer, but we generally encourage you to use Google Chrome, and you can see that it works. It should work on pretty much any browser these days. You can work on it on a number of days, so in the coming days before the deadline, you can certainly work on it today and tomorrow and those days leading up to the application deadline, and do a little bit, work on it a little bit every day. So your entries should automatically save as you proceed through it, but you do need to click that Continue button at the bottom of the page to save those entries. One tip I will make about regardless of what browser you use, many of us have a number of tabs open at any given time. That may not be you, but that is definitely me. So just be careful that you don't have the application open in more than one tab. So just keep it open in one tab only, so you don't kind of wreak havoc on your application by accidentally opening it in a second tab and overwriting stuff and it just gets messy. So just short version, only have the application open in one tab. You have all the application instructions and the awards and all that in other tabs, great, but just the application itself only in one tab or one window. So whenever you're done working on it for the day, if you want to close it out, just to make sure that's totally okay. Just make sure to hit that Continue button before you close it out. The application itself also, we hope that it's fairly intuitive to use. We do have instructions throughout and some guidance in terms of what needs to go into what boxes. We do have required fields in the application, and we've tried to identify those with an asterisk. And if they're not completed, you'll be reminded to complete them before submitting the application. Now, there's also text boxes where you'll need to be mindful of character limits. And for the document uploads, we do have page limits on those. And you'll want to be mindful of those. Okay, so let's go ahead and start. So I'm applying today for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, and you might have just seen this question pop up. So I said yes to the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, and are you applying to an award that allows for grant activities in multiple countries? If you're not sure, go ahead and I'm going to right-click on this, but you can click on that, and it will show you all of the awards that allow for activity to be conducted in multiple countries. So in this case, I'm not. I want to apply for that award for Azerbaijan. And so my next question, aha, I've triggered it. This is good. Okay, so I missed the other questions, and this is really important to see. You can't just, you can skip around a little bit, but not on these first pages. Okay, so have I had a Fulbright grant in the past 2 years? I have not. You may have, so your answer might be different. Are you a U.S. citizen? I am. And I would list, if I am, I would list the United States first. And you do need to enter this even though you said you were a U.S. citizen right here. Now, if I had additional citizenship elsewhere, I would enter that here. And you can use the control button on your keyboard if you have multiple countries. Okay, so now I can click continue and yes. Now we can see the rest of the application, and you can select the country. So we were going to select Azerbaijan, and let's see, we were going to select the All Disciplines Award. In this case, it's easy. There's only one award available in Azerbaijan, but that's not always the case, so you might want to double check that award number and award title to make sure that you have the right one selected. And then here, you'll be able to see some of the basics about the award. So then I can go on and continue on to the next page, which is our personal information. Okay, so you know what? Actually, I've been thinking about this, and Azerbaijan is great, but what if I wanted to go to a couple of countries, or what if I wanted to switch countries? So maybe I do want to do one of these regional programs, and I want to do let's see, I actually want to do the Fulbright Schumann Award and one of their awards. So in this case, I'm going to switch. So I'm going to go back to those preliminary questions. And I'm going to say yes to this. And then I can switch the award to the appropriate Schumann, your EU Affairs Program, and then I can enter the countries. So in this case, I would love to do Austria, and I can't fully keep it all in the A's. There aren't enough A's in the, that'll work, but Malta ends with an A, so that works. Having fun with alliteration here. Okay, so then I can hit continue here on the application. And then I can go ahead and continue on with my application. So if you need to change the award, go back to the preliminary questions if you need to, and then go back to the country and award and change that there if you need to. So I had worked on an application previously, so some of these fields are already filled out for me. And then you can see the country of birth, city of birth, additional information here. I don't have any dependents. Actually, I take that back. I'm going to bring one dependent with me. I don't have any of the felony or misdemeanor or misconduct questions to say yes to. If you do, it'll pop up with a instruction to upload documentation for you. And that will also, along with the data privacy, that is taken and used very carefully. Very, very, very few people, basically just me, have access to that information. And then you can continue on. And certainly no one in the review process would have access to that, not to worry. Okay, so I had indicated that I would bring a dependent with me. Okay, so in this case, let's see. Okay, so you're thinking, yes, they will accompany me, and that's where you would enter your dependence information. Now, if things change in the course of your application being reviewed, like after you submitted it, if something changes, that's fine. It's not a a big deal to change that later. If you are selected for the grant, it doesn't have any bearing on the review of the application. It's more for preparation for our side. If someone is selected for the grant. Okay, so for your contact information, this starts off somewhat strangely with the country, but then it automatically changes the format if a different country is pulled. So you'll enter your country and then the street and city and state and all of that. And then if you're outside of the US, it'll adjust accordingly. If you are not living at your permanent address, so your current mailing address is different, you can enter that information here, and you can enter the dates of validity, when you started there and when that valid date would end. Telephone numbers, we ask that you enter this information, same with the email address. For the email, I want to highlight that field. For the alternate or secondary email address, we ask that this not be the same address that you use as your primary email address, just in case something happens and you're not receiving emails at that primary email address. Maybe you've changed email addresses or changed institutions or something, and maybe forgot to let us know. It's really helpful for us to have a secondary email address to use to get a hold of you. Most of our notifications will be sent by email, so it is really helpful to have that. Emergency contact information that you would enter, again, I mean, that's more of a later in the process thing, but it's helpful for us just in case anything is needed. Okay, so on to the academic and professional information here. This is a lot, of course, about your professional, where you are currently employed, and your academic experience and your experience abroad. So you would enter your current title, and let's see, I'll be an associate professor today. Recently gained tenure, super excited about that. And if you believe me, I have a bridge to sell you in Brooklyn. And you can enter your institution information here. So for the purposes of today's webinar, you can just bear with me. I'm typing in an institution, and you can see the name of the institution just popped up for you. And then you can enter the other information here. Okay, so the current institution address. If you are not affiliated with an institution currently or have another kind of employer, that's fine. But we need to have this address information filled out. So the street, the city, the state, and the country, and the zip code all needs to be there in order for your application to proceed and be submitted. And clearly, I am not the greatest at typing and talking at the same time, so I will try to type quickly in the fields that need to and keep going for you. So let's see. What kind of role do you have in this case for this associate professor? They are able to primarily focus on research and also do some teaching and some service, which is great. And then I'll be able to upload my CV. So I have a test file that I can use, and you can see here, I don't know if you saw quickly in the title, I actually called it too long, so you can see what that looks like. So it says that it shouldn't exceed 6 pages, and we'll take a look at that. So it says how many pages I've uploaded, and we'll see when we get to the review page what that looks like. You want to review the employment eligibility information and answer appropriately there. Academic history, you will enter your degrees here. So, maybe I went to Middlebury, which may not be so much of a city, but is in the lovely state of Vermont. Okay. Okay, so you can go ahead and hit save. And that's what this is what that will look like once that's been entered. So you'll enter that for your degrees and indicate if you're a postdoctoral applicant, you'll answer appropriately to one of these questions. If you are a postdoc applicant and you haven't completed your degree requirements, you'll be asked to indicate when you expect them, and or if you're not a postdoctoral applicant altogether. For your accomplishments, you can list those. I would encourage you to use more of a list format list like in the body of a paragraph versus listing it out as like bulleted items. If you do list bulleted items, that's fine. Just try to make sure that you don't have any spaces so it doesn't look like this. So you would want to remove those spaces. And that's just so that when we see this all in the PDF later on, it won't be cut off. And make sure that there's 5, please. there can be fewer, that's fine, but we want you to try to stick to 5. Experience abroad. Okay, so if you have resided abroad for 3 consecutive months or longer in the past 6 years, we would like you to enter that information here. If you've resided for multiple short periods that would cumulatively add up to 3 months, we would want you to indicate that as well. Because the thing is, if you've resided for 5 or more consecutive years in the 6-year period prior to the application date, your application would be ineligible. So we want it to be super clear to us as we're checking applications once they've been submitted that you do meet that requirement, so that if you are putting it together in a quick table, just make it as clear to us in this section as well that you meet that requirement. So maybe I was in Colombia doing a research fellowship. Maybe that was for a couple of years. Starting, 2016 and coming back in 2018. So that would be 24 months. Okay, so then that will show up here in the experience abroad. And then if you've had a grant previously, you would enter that information here. If you've had a scholar grant previously, you would enter a justification for that prior scholar grant. For the award type, you can list that here. Okay, so maybe I went to Cyprus, and that would be here. Okay, so these text boxes, you can see that they have different character limits depending on the box. Characters include punctuation and spaces, so you may want to work on writing any of the responses to these text boxes in like Microsoft Word or something where you can use the word count feature or character count feature to see how many characters you have, because it's not a word count. That would make for a significantly longer response here. It is 1,000 characters in this case, so it's definitely a shorter response, but should give you ample space to explain. And same with the other text boxes. We've tried to be thoughtful about how much space is needed for these. So I'm going to go ahead and click continue. Okay, so next up we have our academic discipline. So let's see, I had indicated that I was at the School of Law, so most likely my discipline for my project, which is what this is the focus on what I'm doing for my project, would be in law. So if I scroll down to the specialization, I should have picked one near the top of the alphabet. Law. Okay, so maybe I'm looking at environmental law. And you could write additional information about your specialization for the project in this text box. Now, if you are looking at something interdisciplinary, if your work is and that is common, you can enter additional information here. So the discipline, you can only choose one, so this would be kind of like the closest match. And then you can use that other specializations field to explain a little bit further. So maybe my project is environmental law, but it also has a lot to do with public policy. So maybe it has, maybe I mentioned this here, environmental policy, that can help someone who's reading my application to kind of know where my project sits within and across disciplines. So another piece sort of related to the discipline, but should you be in medicine or nursing, you'll want to pay close attention to these questions here. If you will need a license to practice medicine or nursing on the grant, or if you will be involved in clinical training or patient care, both of those are not authorized activities. So if you say yes to either of those, you will be asked to provide an explanation for that. Okay, so for this award that I chose, it's the I ended up going back to that Schumann Award, and this only allows for research. So I would choose research here. If there were other options, they would appear here for that award. You can't make up an option. So if you want to do teaching and teaching is not on this list, then you need to look to see if you have selected the right award for what you're proposing to do. Then I'll enter the start date. Okay, so let me go back to the award. It can be 3 to 9 months, and the grants must occur between September and June of 2021 and 2022. So let's see. So maybe I want to start in September of 2021 and 3 to 9 months. 6 months sounds really great. Okay, right there in the middle. Okay, so your project title goes here, that has a 100 character limit, just FYI, and then you would write your abstract in this box. The other nice thing about working on any of these text responses in Microsoft Word is that you're able to save them outside the system. So if you're working on it and thinking and coming back to it, you won't have an issue of not hitting continue at the bottom of the page, because you hopefully will have an autosave feature on Microsoft Word. But that is something that I would be mindful of, is just making sure that your responses as you're working on them are saved. I know how it can be frustrating when a text box doesn't, when you lose data and responses that you've worked hard to think about and how you want to phrase things. Okay, so preferred host institution. Let's see, one of my countries was Austria, and let's see, the University of Applied Sciences, that looks like a good option. I should actually go to the award to make sure that there are, you know, if there's any limitations, and there's not. It says EU countries. Sometimes an award will specify the host institution, and you would be able, you would be limited to that institution or that, you know, group of institutions if there's more than one. So I'm not proposing additional host institutions at this point. I take that back. I had Malta selected as the second country, so I do need to have something here. And let me see if there's University of Malta. That sounds like a perfect match. Okay, so it's going to go for 6 months, so maybe this is the November to December part. Okay, so that will pop up here. So if you do have additional hosts, if you're going to multiple countries, that would be where you would enter the additional hosting institutions. Invitation letter. So for this particular award, an invitation is required. So it's asking me to upload one. I don't have one right now, but I note that the letters will be accepted until October 15th. So I should have it by the application deadline, and I'll upload it before I submit, but right now I don't have one. Ethical requirements, you'll want to read through that. Alternate countries and awards. If you're willing to be considered for other awards, you can click yes. If not, you can click no. That information is used very, very infrequently. I can't emphasize that enough. We really want you to focus your application on the country that you have selected and on the award and the project that you have designed for that country, where the alternate countries is, again, very infrequently used. So that's kind of like extra information for us to use on the back end, isn't meant to distract you from focusing your application. So new this year, we have a series of text boxes that are addressing several questions that were previously included in the project statement. You can find the prompts for this section on that U.S. Scholar page in our website. It's on the application tab and on project statement. So if I go back here to the application tab and then click on project statement, it is here on the short essay questions. So you can see the questions and you can see the character limits for them as well. And this is where you would enter those responses. And this is definitely a section where I would recommend drafting those responses outside the application and then copying them in. It will tell you if you've exceeded the characters on here, so just make sure that when you're pasting it in, you read all the way to the end of your response to make sure it's not cut off. Okay, so if I'll leave those. I'll upload my project statement later because I'm not quite finished proofreading it. I want to make sure that Fulbright has one L throughout my application, so I want to check that first. And then I'll upload my bibliography at that point as well so that everything is all, everything corresponds as it should. So for this award, it indicates that I need to, or I should have a self-evaluation for language proficiency, foreign language proficiency, and that an external evaluation is optional. So this will change depending on the award. So some awards, English is going to be sufficient. For example, in Australia. In other countries and other awards, it may be a higher level of requirement. And for some countries, it may be a requirement that you have of proficiency in that foreign language. For example, some of the countries that we work with in the Western Hemisphere expect you to have Spanish proficiency, or elsewhere you may need to have Arabic or French. And that will be indicated in the award, and it's also here in the application. So in this case, we can put in German. Took a semester of that in college, definitely still at the beginner level, not going to lie. And then you can answer your the text boxes here for the responses. And if you have no ability, these text boxes are required, so you can just indicate that you don't have any ability in that language. Okay, so in this case, the self-evaluation is optional, so not having this completed won't be flagged in the review page. But if it were required and I did leave this blank, then it would flag that I needed to come back to this section to complete it. And hopefully that wasn't too many double negatives to follow. Okay, so recommenders and foreign language evaluators. So if I needed to have a foreign language evaluation, this is where I would add or register that person. I would click on the type, foreign language evaluation, and then I would enter their information, indicate whether I am waiving my right or not waiving my right to access this, and then sign. And signing, you're just typing your full legal name. Okay, so for recommendations, you need to have two. And something I'll note is that additional recommendations will not be accepted. We've gotten a few emails from folks saying, hey, from recommenders actually saying, I can't access this person recommendation anymore. So if you're adding three and registering three, if you decide that you don't need that third one at some point, please reach out to that recommender to let them know so that they know that their recommendation isn't needed for your application. So you would go ahead and enter your recommenders, your two recommenders information here. And we do understand that there are reasons for adding a third as a, you know, backup kind of situation. But just be aware that when it comes to actually submitting your application, you'll be prevented from submitting it if you have three people listed as recommenders, as submitting recommendation letters for your application. So in this case, type the full legal name after reading the certification, and then click confirm, and then you're almost done. And then these are all the fields that I didn't fill out while we were working through this application. So you can see on this review page, there are a number of fields that I need, or pages that I need to go back to. You can see that CV, that 14-page CV that I had uploaded. It can't exceed 6 for this award, so I need to go back and shorten it and tailor it to really reflect what I'm proposing to do and to highlight my experience. And then when I upload that, that should be fixed. And then any other information, it'll have you go back to that particular page before you're allowed to submit. Now, for the invitation letter, so this is a warning. So this will not prevent you from submitting the application here with the invitation letter. So this warning is saying, look, we note that you need to have an invitation letter, but we see that you don't. You can go ahead and submit your invitation letter, or rather your application without it. But if we don't have it by that October 15th deadline, then your application may not proceed in the review process. So you can see here that I have way too many things to be able to submit right now. But once I have everything cleared, and even if I don't have that invitation letter, I can go ahead and submit that save for later button will change to submit. And we need you to hit submit in order to actually submit your application. So don't forget that really last important step. You need to have people registered to be your recommenders before you submit the application. They don't have to submit their letter, so you could submit your application tomorrow. Their recommendations really should be submitted by the 15th of September. So we want everything to be submitted by the 15th of September or on the 15th of September to get everything in so that you have a complete application package. So you can submit before your recommendations come in. You can submit after your recommendations are submitted. But you need to submit your application on or before September 15th. Let me be super clear about that because we had some confusion last year. So we just want to be super clear that your application, with or without recommendations, needs to be submitted by the 15th. And then your recommenders will hopefully submit before that deadline. And you can also send them a reminder through the application. So once you submit your application, there's a status page which you can use to send them a reminder to submit their recommendation. Or the language evaluation, actually, if they need to submit that still. Okay. Aside from the data privacy and those preliminary questions, you can pretty well jump around and work on things in bits and pieces. There are a few things like the award activity needs to be populated for some of the uploads to be there, but you can definitely take a poke through and work on different pages in a not perfectly sequential order. But just realize that some things, there's logic behind the back of it that may need you to enter something before another part can be seen. Okay, so want to keep an eye on the time. You've submitted the application. Great. Now what? So the first stage, my colleagues and I will be conducting a preliminary check of all of the submitted applications for eligibility and completeness. After that, all complete and eligible applications will undergo peer review. Now, in this process, experts in your field will review your application against the review criteria to determine whether or not it's recommended for further consideration. Now, following peer review, you'll be notified of that outcome, whether your application was recommended or not recommended. So for applications that were recommended in peer review, the next stage has multiple concurrent steps, and that's that November to January phase, or after that, sorry. So Applicants are notified of peer review status, then recommended applications are sent to host countries and to the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board and to the Department of State for their review and selection and approval. And we need to have all three of those decisions before we can notify the applicant of the final outcome, that is whether or not you've been selected for an award or named an alternate. So peer review happens in October and November, and then between November and January, all of those applications are recommended are moved forward in the process. And then between January and June, all of those, the host countries and the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board and the Department of State are working on reviewing the applications, after which we would notify you of the final outcome. So you might be wondering what criteria are used to evaluate applications in the review and selection process, and this is posted on our website. The super short version is that ultimately your application, those reviewing your application expect you to demonstrate that you're qualified and able to undertake your project, that you can adapt it if needed, that your rationale for applying to this country or these countries is sound, that it will have a broad and sustainable impact, and that you're adaptable and culturally sensitive. You need to show that you've read the syllabus, I mean the award description, and that you've done your homework. We ask that you remember that your application will be read by peers from institutions across the U.S. and potentially those in the host country. This means that it needs to be clear, concise, and compelling, preemptively answering any questions they may have. Those reading your application may not be familiar with your institution or your specific niche in your field to understand the specific context of some aspect of it. So basically, you want to make sure that you're connecting all the dots for them rather than leaving them to come to their own conclusion, which might not be the one that you intended. Alumni have reported that having a colleague read their statement of intent, or rather their project statement, before submitting it was especially helpful. Okay, so application resources. As demonstrated earlier, the catalog of awards is a great place to start or to keep working from. Our website, as I mentioned earlier, also has additional guidance on the various components, including the project statement, invitation letters, and so on. We have had a lot of webinars, as mentioned, and we also have some terrific alumni. Our alumni directory is on the CIS website and can be helpful as you work on your application. I will say that with the deadline approaching pretty quickly, the alumni can be helpful, but they too may be starting in a new semester in a kind of new and, you know, teaching environment, that their time might be quite limited right now. But that may also give you some ideas for, you know, just even looking at the directory can give you some ideas for host institutions and project titles and who is even at your own institution who has been a Fulbrighter, or who's in your field who's been a Fulbrighter, that can even be a resource to you as you proceed, you know, later on after you submit. Maybe you're recommended, maybe you're selected, and you're looking for someone who's been there and done that and would like to, you know, bounce some ideas off of them and some questions. So lots of resources for you to consider. I'm about to start answering questions, so if you haven't already, I'm sure you have, but please go ahead and use that questions module to enter questions. We'll do our best to get to as many as we can, and again, you're also welcome to email us afterward. So let me open up that questions module, and I'm going to take a big sip of water. Okay, lots of great questions that have come in. Let's see. Okay, on the Academic and Professional Excellence page, actually on any of the pages where there's not a spot to upload, I would double check that you've selected answers to the prior questions, the questions that precede it. If you're not seeing them and you can take a screenshot of that and email it to us, we can help to troubleshoot any of those questions. The project statement, the syllabi, the bibliography, those are usually tied to the grant activity, and the CV or resume, that one is one that I would want to double check on and don't want to answer that one off the top of my head. Okay, so if you have, let's see, I'm just looking at additional questions. For prior grants, you don't need to indicate if you've applied before, just if you've received a grant previously, and particularly if you've had been able to undertake a grant, that we would want that information to be in there. Okay. Okay, so for host institutions and invitations, it is not too late to apply for the 2021-22 academic year. If the host can get you an invitation, if the award requires an invitation, you would need to have that invitation by October 15th. So that deadline was extended. If the award does not require an invitation, then it wouldn't be too late, and you can go ahead and submit your application ahead and not worry as much about the invitation letter, that wouldn't be a prerequisite for eligibility before the review process starts. Okay. Okay, so in that academic and professional information section, if you are an unaffiliated scholar, if you're working from home or wherever your professional address is, you would enter that in that information if you're not at an institution. Great question. So I have a couple questions from people who have multiple roles, which is not uncommon. So which one should I list? I would say list the one that is that you spend, if you can, I would say list the one that is your primary, and then just make sure that you've got the other one listed in your CV. Those reviewing your application will absolutely be paying close attention to your CV and want to see both of those pieces. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. Okay, going through more questions. Okay, so if you've visited a country for an average of 1 month over a lot of years, you would definitely still be eligible to apply as long as it's just the 1 month. So maybe you go to another country, a specific country, every single summer. That's fine. I think I would take a look at what the paragraph says in the application, but I think it's only if it's 3 consecutive months. Now, if that is not the only visit that you're making abroad, so maybe it's 1 month in the spring, 1 month in the summer, and 1 month in the fall, then you would want to include that. But that alone wouldn't need to necessarily be on there. Is it okay if there's some overlap between the project statement and the supplemental questions? That's a great question about the questions. So the short essays that we added to the application, that should free up some space in your project statement to focus more on the project. So there will more than likely be some kind of natural overlap between the two, but we wanted to pull those out specifically so you had more dedicated space to answer those particular questions. So we've received some questions about uploading documents and using letters with accents and that kind of thing. Equations, accents, images, lots of things being included in the supporting documents, including the project statement. That is fine. What I would do is if you're uploading it as a Word doc initially, I would preview it to make sure that it looks okay. I would honestly really recommend uploading it, saving it as a PDF, and then uploading it as a PDF right into the application. I would still preview it to make sure that everything looks fine, but having lots of umlauts, s-tets, that kind of thing is not necessarily going to be a problem in the uploads, but in the actual like field responses, it may get a little tricky in terms of how that's kind of converted on the back end. So it's okay to include those, but I would just be mindful that it might show up as like percent signs or, you know, something that's not quite the letter that was intended there. Not a make or break. Okay, just going through some more questions. On the invitation letter, I wouldn't say that there's so much like a page limit or restriction on those. I hesitate to say that. Generally speaking, most invitation letters are a page. Some are on letterhead. Some may be much more formulaic depending on the institution and their process for issuing letters of invitation. I know just like in the U.S., some institutions have a very specific process, and maybe one office, centralized office, is able to issue them, or one person on campus can issue these letters. And others can be much more of a letter and engaging and more supportive, almost like a reference letter. So there isn't really a set format for them per se. We do have guidance on the website in terms of what should be included. Basically, you should be the person who it's addressing, as you're the one who's being invited as the applicant. What you're proposing to do, the time period that you're proposing to be there, and any additional relevant information that would be necessary for the application for your project. Let's see. Okay, so this is a good question. I know higher education due to coronavirus is in a very precarious situation. At many institutions are in a really precarious situation. And as a result, many of you as our applicants are as well. So if your role, if you were not reappointed, if your role has changed, I think you can go ahead and list your most recent position as your affiliation. I think that's fine. but what I would absolutely do is just make sure that's clear in your CV, that this situation has changed. We do understand that. I know that those reviewing the applications are coming from all across academia and the professional worlds as well, and they are both aware and will be reminded of that in the review process. They are they're situated well across the fields. Okay. I've gotten a few questions about the review criteria, so let me actually take a moment. We've got a few minutes. Take a moment to go back over to the application page and let's see. Okay, so we're on the application page with the project statement guidance. And by application page, I mean the CIS web page. Let me be more clear about that. So the application tab, and then next to it, we have the review criteria tab. So the review criteria, this is what the reviewers will be using to assess applications. The peer review phase is organized broadly by discipline. So people in your broad field will be reviewing your application. They are experts in that field, and they have been identified for their expertise and their contributions to the field. So they're looking at all of these criteria. Whether you're an academic, whether you're an artist, whether you're a scholar, a legal scholar, or rather a legal, you know, practitioner, someone who works in you know, public policy, it's meant to really stretch across the fields, that it isn't that the criteria change depending on the field of the project and the applicant. What we ask, you know, the reviewers to do is to consider the full application, to review it holistically, which is why we want you to present a thoughtful and strategic but also holistic application to show that you have that you demonstrate the background and the expertise that you need for it, that you have the project is relevant and current in terms of what's going on in that particular field. Even related fields, you know, can be what else is going on in related fields that might have an impact on what you're proposing to do. And so all of these, it's looking at the bigger picture. It's also looking at the specifics. So when I mentioned that the application, the project statement needs to be specific, it's for that peer review process, but it also needs to be broadly understood. So we'll appear in your, you know, department or in your specific field, really see what you're trying to say and have any questions. Will any of those questions be answered within the project statement that they would be looking for answers to? And then similarly, would your neighbor also understand that maybe they are not remotely an expert in this field, and would they understand the importance of what you're trying to do and how you're trying to do it? And it's balancing those pieces as best as we can, working on that that project statement. It can take some time. You still have time. So I don't want to sound, I don't want to be discouraging by any means, but just make sure that, you know, you're answering the questions but also not being so technical and using a lot of jargon that it's going to be hard for someone who's not familiar with the field to understand. The other thing along with that, make sure that you try, that if your field is very technical in nature, we recommend turning, I know many of us turn spell check off because half of a document might be red underlines or squigglies. So turning it back on just to make sure that you catch anything that isn't jargon that might be misspelled or the wrong word might have been used. Okay, so going through a few more questions, we have a couple more minutes. We have a lot of questions. I'm so glad to see that there's so much interest here. I apologize for not being able to talk faster. we aren't able to stay on after this one this afternoon, unfortunately, so if we aren't able to get to your question, you know, please feel free to email us afterward. Let me go back to that screen with our email address. Okay, sorry, I'm scrolling through some of the questions. I know my colleagues have been able to answer some in the course of this. So going back to the invitation letters, and I think I might be able to take one more after this, going back to the invitation letters, if the award doesn't require an invitation, if it's optional or preferred or what have you, having one can definitely demonstrate that you have done, you know, taken the time, that there's someone on the other side who is interested in this project. But we also recognize that in some countries, and heck, even in the United States, it can be really hard to get a hold of people. Even in a non-coronavirus year, that sometimes getting responses to things can be hard. We don't have a contact in a country. Maybe it's a country that, you know, we haven't done, it's a location we haven't done a lot of work in. So finding that right location can take some time. And in many countries that we work with, especially where invitations aren't required, I think our partners abroad are able to work with those selected for grants on that. So if you don't have it at the time of application and it's not required, I would, you know, do your best to demonstrate why this country and what you'll do on this award. We recognize that you'll have to kind of build in some flexibility in that plan, but we know that plans can change. Even, you know, for I think almost every Fulbrighter will say that somehow their project changed in some way from what they proposed to what actually was done. So recognizing that some aspects, some variable may change in that process and being ready to roll with it. And that can sometimes, you know, include the host institution that, you know, maybe you had identified one, you know, as a preliminary thought for your application, and the host country comes back and says, actually, this other institution would be a perfect fit for you. So recognizing that that can be a possibility as well. I'm not going to guarantee that that's always the case, but it can definitely be that can definitely happen. So. Let's see. Will September 30th be soon enough for an invitation letter? Yes, that would be great, actually. If you can get it to us before October 15th, that would be super. That'll let you sleep easier. That'll let, you know, us make sure that we can get it in the application. And we'll be following up in the coming days with more information. I think in the application itself, it says to contact the regional program person. So I would say in that award description, there's an email address, there's an email address that you can send these things to. If you want to send it, for those listening, if you want to send it to scholars@iie.org, we can parse it out to the right people to upload that to your application for you. But yes, you can definitely submit those before. There's no harm. You know, it's just like students to say, can I submit the paper early? Yes, absolutely. We're happy to see that. So yeah, if that's the only thing that's preventing you from submitting the application, go ahead and submit it, and we can work with you to upload that invitation letter. So. We are unfortunately out of time. I would love to spend more time answering questions for you this afternoon, but as I know that the application deadline is approaching, I do have a few more comments. I just want to reiterate that applications are encouraged from academics and professionals from all disciplines, representing the many types of institutional and professional affiliations. I urge you to utilize the resources on our website and to contact us with any questions. We ask that you be patient at this busy, busy, busy time of year, so thank you for that. We have many resources on our website. You are welcome to use this webinar to put you to sleep another day or another night after you submit, as well as leading up to the application. Again, finally, the application review process does have multiple stages, so your application will be read by experts and non-experts alike, and then it does have to make it through peer review before it can proceed to that in-country review. So, thank you so much for taking the time to attend this webinar today. We hope you found it helpful, and we look forward to seeing your application soon. Thank you, and best wishes.